The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.
Hey guys, welcome to The Counter podcast and live stream. You guys are going to learn that whenever Steven talks, I just stare off in the distance or check my phone. No, just kidding. Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about the first round of the NFL draft, our impressions of an eventful night, eventful day. Steven and Charles spent the night grading every pick, so we will eventually get through to those once Charles has wiped his camera off so you can see more clearly how handsome he is. So we'll get through to those. We'll also talk about some of the players we're still excited about moving into round two, and also break down our thoughts on which teams got more exciting, basically, which teams we're now more excited to see play. But there was a lot of news yesterday, just in general in the NFL. The main piece of it being Aaron Rodgers wanting out of Green Bay, apparently, which it's weird because the storyline, it sort of felt like it was coming, right? There was all this weirdness all offseason. It felt like he just wasn't saying it for some reason. Like, it felt like he was hinting around the edges that he was upset with the franchise. And obviously that goes back to last year's draft when they picked Jordan Love instead of getting him help. So basically picked his replacement, heir apparent, instead of getting someone to catch or run the football or block players trying to tackle him. What did you guys think about the timing of that coming out and how the Packers are saying we're keeping Aaron Rodgers and we're going to convince him to play for us? How do you see all this unfolding at this point?
I feel like he wanted to wait until after the Jeopardy thing to do it. Cause what if he like bombed at Jeopardy and that wasn't actually an option?
Like, he had it like, so he's leveraging his strong performance in Jeopardy. Is this storyline? I can't imagine that if I had told you last year that we were going to live through a pandemic and then Aaron Rodgers would be leveraging, replacing Alex Trebek against playing quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. What?
It's amazing.
It's crazy. And it almost seemed like, I don't know if this is like too conspiracy theorist of me, but it almost seemed like he dropped that.
Oh,
like right before the draft. Like, hey, if you want to,
he's got a flair for the dramatic, man. He's got it.
Me, you better get a receiver, one of these first round picks, you know. And then they still took that quarterback from Georgia, Eric Stokes. So, like, Rodgers definitely all about these petty power plays. I'm interested to see like what he can actually accomplish here, because there were rumors yesterday that maybe he's going to get flipped for Denver's pick, the ninth pick, but that didn't happen, obviously. So now that the first round's gone, like, where do you go to make these moves?
But if you're the Packers and Rodgers makes it clear that maybe he doesn't want to come back, why don't you call the 49ers back up and say, hey, maybe we'll take that third overall pick after all? Because that was really the only way you salvage this, other than making amends with Aaron Rodgers and he's starting for them again in September, which I still think is going to happen. I don't think this relationship is going to end, at least this offseason. I don't know about beyond 2021. I could definitely see him leaving after that. It seems like that's what he wants. But if you're the Packers, and I feel like you need that quarterback to build around. Otherwise, it's going to look pretty bleak after this year.
Yeah, especially, I mean, do they still believe in Jordan Love or not? Right, they've had him for a year now. So, like, if they actually do believe in him and that he's the next guy, like, that would have been the perfect – I mean, maybe – getting that number three pick, you don't want to pick another quarterback, but you get Sewell or you get a wide receiver. Like, I don't know. Do something to help the guy.
I thought it was interesting that like they had offered him extension, because, well, two things about that revolve around Jordan Love was, to me at least, was they offered him the extension, which to me shows like we don't believe in Jordan Love that much. And also right. Another thing is like, Jordan Love was inactive all season behind Tim Boyle, and Tim Boyle stinks, so I don't really know how much faith you could have in him that he turns into a decent quarterback. I mean, he was literally inactive all season long.
And I just don't understand how you're so adamant that you're not going to trade Aaron Rodgers. That's like what we've heard from the team. If you do have this belief in Jordan Love after he's been in the league for a year, right. Like, if he's not ready to play by year two, why did you spend a first-round pick on him? I'm not saying that they should be forced to play him because they drafted him in the first round, but he should at least be ready if that was an option they needed to take.
Right. And they should be ready to find out, really. Like, right. That's because you just got to let him play, see what happens, and then decide whether or not to move on. We're going to talk a ton about quarterback development, I feel like, because a certain quarterback went number 15 to a certain team that a lot of people are just assuming will be able to turn him into something. And so I'm sure we're going to dig in on that at some point. What were your overall impressions of this draft? I mean, it was a different situation because of the coronavirus, right? There was no combine, first of all. There were fewer opportunities. The college seasons were interrupted. Some teams only played a handful of games. Trey Lance, ended up being the number three pick, only played one single game and was not very good this year. There were limited opportunities for scouting, limited opportunities for teams to meet with players. So it was a totally different situation than we're accustomed to. And I think we were all guessing how it was going to play out and what that would mean for the draft. But now we have the first round. And one thing that we noted last night and other people have noted is that it went sort of according to the mocks. It was Charles threw one together and essentially nailed it.
How many picks did you get?
I think I got like close to 10 picks right. And I got a few picks that were like, well, I was like one pick away, or it was right pick, wrong team. Like I got a Vera Tucker getting picked at 14 by the Vikings, but he got picked at 14 by the Jets. And I spent maybe 20 minutes putting those picks together. So
Corman should have to do a rep on that weight set back there for every pick you got right.
All right, I'm going.
But yeah, it's interesting this year that the mocks were so close to like what happened in reality. I mean, and I think that might be because media and teams had similar levels of access to information, and you know, like teams weren't going to games of like of teams that weren't playing last year, and obviously the season was much shorter for a lot of schools. So,
and there were a bunch of opt outs. Yeah. How many opt outs got picked? Like five or six, right? I mean, right.
Yeah, geez. Yeah. I wonder how that changes too. Like, if you can opt out of this season, and obviously, like, I'm not going to blame anyone for opting out and still get drafted. What, Sewell went 7. The Trey Lance played one game, went 3.
Parsons,
other guys. Yeah, Parsons got drafted. If you can sit out a whole season and still get drafted in the first round, if you're a highly touted guy, like, do you just consider just not playing that last year in general before? Jamar Chase too.
Right. I don't know if this is definitive proof, but I think it does show that there is not much separating NFL teams and like people who do it on the internet in terms of evaluating players. Because we were basically on the same page with the NFL teams, and this was the one year they didn't have that advantage of having more access to players, which we obviously don't have. Right. And that's kind of embarrassing for the NFL, if you ask me.
Well, the difference is the meetings with players, right? And having honest conversations with players' coaches, right? Like, media talks to coaches, but they just spout BS to us, right? Like, but if a NFL coach calls his buddy who happens to coach Notre Dame or Miami or whatever, he's going to get like a more honest. So I think there are many more, and that probably still happened to some degree, but there's a lot more like cross-pollination of ideas and thoughts and scouts sort of get influenced. And this time, like, they were sort of locked in on the film and whatever numbers they could get their hands on, which is how we end up doing it, right? Like, it's just sort of film and whatever's out there and available. We don't have to filter noise in from different sources. We don't ask the kids ridiculous questions like, do you want to play rock, paper, scissors or whatever? You know, we're just looking at the film, and it turns out that when you do it that way, you sort of come up with the same conclusions. So good job, Chuck, on that mock draft.
Yeah, all right. I didn't do as well as Josh Norris, who has just been showing his ass all over the internet over getting 16 mock draft picks, right? But congrats, Josh.
16.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts about the draft overall? It was long.
It's long. I forget every year how long it is. I was sitting there like, damn, so I pick 14, 15. Like, how are we going here? But I feel like it was also kind of boring in a way because it went to plan. It would have been a lot more fun if Mac Jones got picked 3, but he didn't. I feel like it just wasn't all that surprising.
And like, it was like the usual suspects who were doing things that nobody agreed with, like the Giants taking Kadarius Toney. But it's like, at this point, like Dave Gettleman doing something stupid on draft day is kind of like tired.
It would be news if he did. Get a new bit,
Gettleman. And the same with the Raiders reaching for a player that played for a top five program. Like that's their thing now. So those are really the only two picks that I had questions about. Maybe the Washington pick. But other than that, and I think the draft is only as entertaining as how many dumb decisions there are on draft night. Like, it's not fun when, like...
You're just trying to give out Fs. That's
I really wanted Kyle to take Mac Jones.
But why, though?
Because it would have been funny. But now, like, now we don't have much to make fun of on this podcast. And it's less entertaining.
We'll find things. All right, let's get to the grades. You guys graded every pick. We had this Trevor Lawrence one pre-written for a long while. Everyone knew it was coming. Apparently Trevor Lawrence like already knows the Jaguars. They've been installing it
since like February
via phone. It was funny how ESPN was like, yeah, they didn't break the rules, it was just on phone. Like, really, guys? You need to be that picky about it? So we knew this was coming. Steven, you gave it, I think you had this one, right? You guys actually, you flip-flopped.
I went first. I gave it an A. I wrote this at like 6 p.m.
There's
not much to say about it. Like, I think Andrew Luck, like, I honestly think Andrew Luck, I just called him Andrew Luck. I think Trevor Lawrence is a bit underrated,
right?
Just because we don't really talk about his game. We just take for granted that he's this generational prospect. But I think when you really watch his game, if you go back and watch his 2020 tape, which no one had to do because we knew what he was going to be, right, what pick he was going to be. But I think people don't really appreciate what his game has become and how it's evolved. I know Clemson's offense is really simple, but he still managed to stand out from that simplicity and show NFL level things, which I think is just an amazing feat. And that's why I'm like, other than injuries or the Jaguars just being totally incompetent, I don't see how he failed. I don't see how he fails.
Yeah. That's this second hyperlink here is a post that you published right when the pick was announced.
Did you just call it a hyperlink?
Isn't that what it's called?
That's what it's called.
Yeah, but that's what, like, what people say that are like 50 years old.
Oh. I mean, I'm like almost
50. A hyperlink.
Yeah.
Do you type in www.com when you type in URLs?
to a piece that Steven published with a bunch of film breakdown showing what he's talking about. And I mean, I think we all sort of agree that in many ways, Lawrence, he's just been like, it's been inevitable for so long that people stop really thinking about it or
assessing
it. Just sort of a reminder of what a special project.
Like, why would I talk about Trevor Lawrence when I can fight someone over the internet?
About Mac Jones.
Yeah.
Or Zach Wilson at number two. Charles, you gave out this grade to a team that you used to cover.
Yeah.
A B. A B. That feels about right, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's more the process. Like,
right,
I don't get how Zach Wilson is just like the unquestioned number two quarterback in this class. Like, I get feeling that way about Trevor Lawrence, but you know, like I think that there are very legitimate and reasonable conversations to have about Zach Wilson versus Justin Fields and Trey Lance. I mean, personally, I like both of them a little bit more than Zach Wilson. So,
right,
you know, for this pick to just be unquestioned for so long was a little bit weird to me, because it's not like Zach Wilson's this can't miss prospect or anything. So, he is deserving of a top 10 pick. So, you know, they still got a quality quarterback prospect and hopefully someone who can be better than Sam Darnold.
There were a lot of jokes about how young he looks. How long is that?
Are you holding your microphone like you're calling me 50 and you're like in your living room holding your microphone like you're
I lost my microphone. I lost my microphone stand. But there was a lot of jokes about how young he looked. And those are the type of things that I think we get on NFL teams for caring too much about, like whether they look the part. But I think at a certain point it matters. And the fact that he does not look like an NFL quarterback because he's so small does matter. And I don't know how this is going to look when he has to play. And I'm assuming he's going to play week one. of this year because they have no competition for him.
On one hand, I think that, you know, if you're a team and you really like a guy and you decide, like, you got to, like, do it, trust your instincts. But, like, also if they really were locked in on Zach Wilson and knew that there was that was probably not the consensus across the league, like, why not be a little craftier about it? Why not see if you can trade back to 5 or something and still get him? It seems hasty all around. But
they're the Jets.
It's the Jets, right? So we shall see what happens here. All right, the draft really started at 3 with the San Francisco 49ers. Traded a boatload to get up to this spot. Interestingly enough, after this pick was made, Kyle Shanahan was adamant that they knew all along that they wanted Trey Lance, that he had fallen in love with the guy, was watching his film, and just knew that was it, and that's what prompted the trade. Why all the Mac Jones talk? Don't know. Not really sure why it ever got to the point that it did. Mac Jones was the betting favorite for a lot of the draft season, so there was probably something to it.
How much of that was just Chris Sims and the fact that he is friends with Kyle Shanahan? I feel like it was like 80% of it.
Yeah.
But there were like legitimate reports. Like Adam Schefter, I think, was one of them.
Are you saying everything's fake? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's all fake.
God.
I mean, it could have just been Mac Jones's agent, like trying to put in the word that teams think of him as a top 5 pick, and maybe that inflated his value, but it didn't work.
Yeah. Trey Lance it is. This is certainly a pick that we were much better, felt much better about. B+ on this one. What's your thinking, Stephen?
Yeah. I mean, Lance is one of the like biggest mysteries in the draft, just because we only saw him play when he was 19 years old, and he played at the FCS level, which obviously, you know, presents questions. And I thought Fields was the better prospect, but in this offense, I would not be surprised if Trey Lance, even if he's not as good of a player as Justin Fields is, I still think he would produce better than him in this offense just because of what it does for quarterbacks. And honestly, this is the most fun result just from like a football watching perspective, because Kyle Shanahan with this type of quarterback, who, as we've said before, this is like the type of quarterback you could build your run game around.
All right.
And Shanahan has already evolved his run game over the last couple of years. And now you add this layer into it, and it's going to be really fun to watch from an X's and O's standpoint.
Yeah, Charles noticed early on that Trey Lance actually had played under center way more than any other quarterback in this class, and really excelled there. And that's how Kyle Shanahan likes to operate his run game.
Yeah, that was one of the things to me where, you know, people talked about Kyle Shanahan kind of wanting to like play Madden and be the joystick or the quarterback just his joystick or whatever. And I'm like, I do think that's true about him, but to me, that description fit Trey Lance more than Mac Jones coming to this class. Like Trey Lance functionally has gone through the motions of what he's going to be doing in San Francisco in a much more tangible way than Mac Jones ever really did. So, you know, that comparison was always a little bit more, a little bit confusing to me, because I thought that Trey Lance was a clear good fit in that offense. And I think he's going to kill it in that.
And you think about when you play Madden, if you play Madden online, everyone picks mobile quarterbacks because none of the processing stuff matters, because you see the field and you don't have to go through your progressions in Madden. Like, you want the most talented quarterback. That's what matters. No one picks Philip Rivers in Madden. They pick like Kyler Murray.
The general sense last night seemed to be that Lance going to the Niners with Jimmy Garoppolo in place would mean that he would have time to acclimate. Now, Steven, you made this point earlier that do you really want to do that? Like, poor Trey Lance has not really gotten any chance to play real football in so long. Like, maybe you owe it to him to just get him on the field and get him real reps.
I don't even think you have to do it. It's not whether you want to do it to him or whether he deserves it. Like, I think he's ready to play right away, more so than a Mac Jones, for instance, who has to catch up mentally in order to be his best self as a quarterback. Like, if Mac Jones isn't the smartest player on the field, then what is he? But Trey Lance doesn't really need that, especially in this offense, which makes things so much easier for the quarterback. I really think he can play from day one. Like, RG3 was seen as a raw prospect, and he played from day one and was one of the most productive quarterbacks in the league from day one.
Yeah.
And I think Trey Lance is more advanced as a pocket passer than RG3 ever was. I think he's already a better pocket passer than RG3 is right now.
Wow. All right, let's go to number four. Charles had great interest in this pick. He had written a preview to the draft saying that, you know, Atlanta really was going to tell us sort of what they thought about themselves, what the Falcons thought about their timeline with this pick. Were they going to take a quarterback and have somebody stashed away for when Matt Ryan leaves or can't play at the same level? Or were they going to make a trade and add draft capital? Or were they going to pick the top non-quarterback player in this draft? They went with that third option.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I am disappointed that they kind of didn't have the foresight, I guess. Or maybe they do have the foresight and they just didn't feel like it was the right time to take a quarterback. But, you know, I just thought, like, he's sitting there at four. Matt Ryan, like, I don't know if he's still going to be, like, a viable option in a couple of years. And anyway, like, you know, he's going to be almost 40 in a couple of years when it's kind of make that decision. And it just seemed like if you're right here, you might as well just take the guy and hope for the best. But, like, Kyle Pitts is awesome. If you watch him play, like, there's a reason why – like, tight end prospects usually don't get picked this high, but it's so apparent when you watch him play that this guy's just on a different level from everyone else. Like, if I had to pick like one player in this draft class to be a Hall of Famer, it would be Kyle Pitts. He just changes the math for you on what you can do with the tight end in the vertical passing game for sure, in the red zone. I mean, it just, like, when you watch him play, it just doesn't make sense that a guy who's 6'6", 240 can move like that. He's as shifty as he is, as fast as he is. So, like, I get just taking Pitts and being like, all right, well, hopefully we can keep Julio Jones and then we'll have Calvin Ridley and this cyborg playing tight end. And if you're Arthur Smith and you're as good as a play caller as we think you are, that's more than good enough to get this Falcons offense back on track. It's just the defense is probably going to be one of the worst in the league. And you know, you're not making a real playoff run. You're just having fun for a couple of years, which is, hey, yeah, that's also not the worst thing in the world.
And I don't know how much there is to the rumors of Julio Jones getting traded, but now I feel like the Falcons are obligated to not trade him and at least give us one season of Julio Jones, Ridley, and Pitts together.
Yeah. I really don't think that. I mean, I know they don't want to trade him at all. This might have to, but I really think they're going to try to do everything they can to hang on to him for at least one more season.
It's going to be awful to watch Sam Howell throwing to these three guys in a couple of years.
I'm not interested. Not interested.
Yeah, it definitely seems like the Falcons are thinking they can make a push this year with this team. So, number five. Cincinnati Bengals. The debate here was offensive line or wide receiver, which one would help Joe Burrow more. They reunited Joe Burrow with Ja'Marr Chase, his top target from the national championship year at LSU. Gave it a C+. We've been down on Chase for a little bit now.
Yeah, I really thought they should have went offensive line just because I thought Sewell was a more sure thing than Chase. There are questions, like, Chase was undeniably one of the best receivers in the country 2 years ago. Like, just look at his numbers. Like, you're not, if you're not a good receiver, you're not going to put up numbers like that.
Right.
But there are questions about how his game is going to translate to the NFL. He's smaller. He's 6 feet. On top of that, he has short arms. So it's going to be hard for him to bully cornerbacks like he did in the SEC at the NFL level. And then when you don't create a lot of separation, like that wasn't his thing in college, I don't see how that's going to be his thing in the NFL. And with all the other receivers in this class, like, I don't understand staying put there and using that pick on a receiver instead of just either trading back or taking the top tackle available in the draft when that is such a position of need for them.
Yeah, it was such a deep wide receiver class, too. It just feels like he could have flipped it for something.
We talk about the track record of top 10 tight ends, but the track record for top 10 receivers isn't really much better.
Right. It's very hit or miss.
Especially for this, like, archetype of receiver.
that brings us to six, where we got the second wide receiver off the board. The Dolphins, again, reuniting players, Jalen Waddle and Tua Tagovailoa. They actually didn't play that much together, end up that much on the field together due to injuries and whatnot, but two Alabama guys, and we give this one a B+.
Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe I'm a bit high on it, but I just love Jalen Waddle.
Yeah, no, he's fast, man.
Yeah, he's fast. He's legit one of the few receivers that can be compared to Tyreek Hill, because like what makes Tyreek Hill such an insane player is not just the fact that he's got 4.2 speed, but like he's a ridiculous route runner. Like I think one of the games I like to go back to is one of the games that Matt Moore started that year when Mahomes got hurt versus the Packers. You just watch Tyreek Hill out there, and he's running routes and making life easy for Matt Moore. And I think Jalen Waddle brings a lot of the same things, and he can also go up and get contested catches too. So he's not just like your prototypical, you know, nine route post speed guy. Like he can do a lot of different things on the field, and that's just a really, really nice player to have. I guess like the more I think about it, I'm just not sure how this group of receivers kind of fits with Tua.
I was going to ask, like, what is this? Is it like Will Fuller sort of running deep and opening up space underneath for Waddle to catch and run? Or like, what? How is this supposed to work? Because Tua is not going to reach these guys, right?
Because like when you think about the best of Will Fuller in Houston, it's, you know, he's running deep and Deshaun is throwing like a 50-yard or 60-yard dime right on the money, and you get 80 yards on a chunk play. And that's just not really what I envisioned Tua becoming.
I feel like the fit with Tua is worse for Fuller than it is Waddle.
Yeah,
because I think Waddle is going to be that like intermediate deep crosser guy, which Tua has no problem hitting those throws. I think that's like probably what he's best at, actually. And the thing I'll say about Waddle, like, he's not just really fast. He does a good job of, like, leveraging his speed. Like, you'll see him change the pace of his routes. He'll, like, slow down to catch the corner off guard and just accelerate in a hurry and just create so much separation. So I wouldn't typecast him as just a deep threat. Like, I think he is what people thought Henry Ruggs was last year, which I don't think Ruggs' speed was really utilized on. When I watched him on film, I don't think he utilized it like Waddle.
All right, number seven, Detroit Lions. Penei Sewell has been selected to bite kneecaps, I guess. They determined that he's the guy who can play the Dan Campbell way. What do we think about this pick?
Good pick. Makes sense. But, I mean, yeah,
very good.
Like, why aren't the Lions picking a quarterback?
They got Jared Goff, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know what their timeline is, what they think their timeline is. I guess that's the question. Do you try to put like tackles and receivers in place and then draft a young quarterback? Like, I mean, could that be their thinking, that they want to get those other players in place and then 2023 they're looking at a quarterback?
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, obviously my evaluation of Justin Fields isn't going to be their evaluation.
Right.
But like, to me, Fields was a special quarterback prospect.
I had this fight with my friends yesterday. Like, it all depends on how you think about Fields, but like, he certainly seems like one of the better QB prospects in the last decade.
I mean, when you look at like just a checklist of what you look for in a quarterback prospect, he checks every single box there is. Every single box. There isn't one that he doesn't check, which why I'm so confused why he wasn't considered the consensus number two quarterback in this draft. But the Lions, like, if you're going to pass on a quarterback and in this situation, at least take the best player available, and they did that. So I don't think you can be too mad, but still, a quarterback just changes your whole outlook for the next couple of years. And right now, it still looks bleak. Like, there's Penei Sewell's not going to solve the Lions' problems, just like Joe Thomas didn't solve the Browns' problems.
Right. Number eight, Carolina Panthers. Sorry, Stephen. J.C. Horn, the quarterback from South Carolina. Another team that is totally unclear why they're not picking a quarterback here. Another team that has picked up a reclamation project in the offseason, Sam Darnold. Yeah. Gave it a B, though. You guys are nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, JC's a good player. I was definitely surprised by the pick, but I think that this kind of is a shift towards maybe the Panthers being a little bit more man coverage heavy than they were last year, which I think is smart if you're going to have J.C. Horn and Dante Jackson as your starting corners, because, you know, those guys do better in man coverage. I know Steven's probably upset they didn't take Fields here, but hey, this is Sam Darnold's team now. You better embrace it. You better get on the ride.
I hate this team. I hate everything about this team now.
You know, it's become. I actually got into an argument last night with someone. Someone told me, like, oh, Sam Darnold's nice. I'm like, I'm not going to – I was arguing back and forth. I'm like, what am I doing? I'm not
gonna Sam Darnold. In 2021.
I'm spending time on
it's like the Panthers are just trolling me specifically. They pass on Justin Fields, who's one of my favorite quarterback prospects I've ever watched, which doesn't really mean anything. I don't know. He could be a bum for all I know. But they passed on him for Sam Darnold, the quarterback I don't like. And for a cornerback that I didn't really like. Like, I think J.C. Horn has the tools to be a top corner one day. But I just didn't see it on film. Like, I didn't see him covering people. I saw him mauling people and holding people. And they don't call defensive holding in college football.
Right.
They call it like crazy in the NFL. And I think it's going to be a tough transition for him. And maybe he figures it out. And maybe he doesn't need to do that to cover people. But like, I don't know what evidence you can look at on film that says that. I definitely think he has the tools to be a top cover guy. It's just, is this coaching staff going to get it out of him? I don't know.
At 9, the Denver Broncos also went with a cornerback, Patrick Surtain the second out of Alabama. Value position, cornerback. B-.
Yeah, I mean, I like Surtain. I think he's a great fit for Fangio's defense. I think he's probably the perfect fit if they were going to take a cornerback. It's just the same thing as the Panthers. Like, Justin Fields was there. You're going into the season with Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock. With an offense that's ready-made for a quarterback to step in there and have success from day one.
Right. So much.
You're wasting this on Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater? I don't get it. I don't know. Like, Justin Fields is right there. Even Mac Jones, I think I would have given a B instead of a B-. But Sertan's a good player, so they're not going to regret
it. Defense wins championships, Steven.
Yep.
I'd rather have Mac Jones than Drew Lock.
Yeah, me too. Like, why not? Like, what does Drew Lock do better than Mac Jones? I mean, he has a stronger arm, but yeah, that's where I'm at with Drew Lock.
The Philadelphia Eagles traded up from 12. They had traded back from 6 to 12, then up to 10 to get Devonta Smith away from the Giants, who were apparently going to pick him at 11. This must be the guy the Eagles wanted. B+, like it.
Yeah, I like the pick. Sorry, I got distracted. I just saw that Kyle Pitts is going to wear number 8, and I'm like, wow, that's fire.
I predicted you would order a Kyle Pitts jersey.
I'm not ordering
Kyle Pitts while doing this.
I can't wear the jersey of a 20-year-old. I'm sorry. I like this pick because I think the Eagles are coming to the draft just based on like reports and talking to people that they were kind of fixated on Devonta Smith. And, you know, another horrible secret that the Giants failed to keep was that they were basically going to take one of Waddle or Smith at 11, whoever was left. And, you know, Dave Gettleman did not do a good job of keeping that secret. And the Eagles hopped up to get their guy. I don't really think the third round pick is that big of an upgrade or that big of a loss, I should say.
Right.
And I am still just on Team Devonta. I think he's going to kill it in the NFL. And I know why people would be concerned about that, but just, I don't know. Just, I hate to say that, but just watch the tape, dude. Like, the guy's outrageous.
Yeah. Like, the weight thing is not a concern if it doesn't show up on tape. If it was an issue, it would definitely show up on tape, right? Like, he's going up against NFL level corners in the SEC.
Right. And he would be hurt more. Waddle was the guy who was hurt a lot. Devonta Smith was fairly
right. And I'm kind of contradicting myself because I said earlier that Jamar Chase beat up on SEC corners, and I don't know if that's going to happen in the NFL, but it was, he did it.
I appreciate you calling yourself out. That was nice.
But Devonta Smith did it in a different way. like corners couldn't touch him at the offensive at the line of scrimmage. They couldn't get a hand on him. And I don't know if that's going to change because he is that special of like a mover. You just watch him play. He just glides past people. Like there's no issue. He deals with contact fine while he's running routes. I think there is a bit of an issue at the catch point, but he's going to be wide open. So he's not going to have to deal with a lot of contested catch situations anyway.
All right. Number 11, the Chicago Bears doing good things. What is happening? Bears trade up. So the Giants don't get the wide receiver they want. They decide to trade back. The Bears jump in and they get Justin Fields. Sorry, Andy Dalton.
I don't want to talk about this pick. I'll let Jim talk.
Are you too sad? Are you too sad?
Jealous. Are you jealous?
Imagine being jealous of the Bears quarterback situation.
Yeah, that's a low point. Yeah, this is
awesome. I feel bad that Justin Fields is going to be burdened with saving Matt Nagy and Ryan's job, but I think he might be talented enough to pull it off. I mean, they didn't come to this, like they're not relying on Andy Dalton for the whole season, and I think that that's a good spot to be in. And also, like honestly, I honestly think
that's take there
right
2021.
But like honestly, I think that Andy did like enough decent things in Dallas last year that maybe you can sit Fields on the bench for a couple games if he's, you know, taking them a little bit to get adjusted. But hey, they actually did the right thing. They took a real quarterback prospect this time. It's the first time I've ever seen it happen.
I mean, I know like Matt Nagy, I don't like he's kind of been a good coach overall. They've won games. I mean, a lot of it has
overachieved in a lot of ways. I mean,
and like they changed that offense last year on the fly and made Mitch Trubisky like look good over the last month. I don't see why you can't run that same offense, but now you have just a better quarterback doing it. Like, I think he's going to be able to play from day one. I think it's going to work. I really am not that concerned with the fit in Matt Nagy's offense just because he made Mitch Trubisky look like a decent option for at least a month, and they made the playoffs with him. So, I mean, I think this is going to work out. I think the Bears might make the playoffs just on the strength of this pick alone.
We have a question from Twitter. We asked people if they were wondering anything. CO writes, do the Bears have the tools in place for Justin Fields to succeed? I mean, they got Allen Robinson, so.
Yeah, they got Allen Robinson. They got Darnell Mooney. I like Cole Kmet coming out last year. I think they do have the cast around him, and I think Matt Nagy's offense, I think he's at least forward-thinking enough to get the most out of this type of quarterback who can add something on the ground. Like we saw him do that with Mitch Trubisky. Mitch Trubisky was valuable as a runner. I think he'll make Justin Fields just as valuable, if not more so.
Number 12, Dallas Cowboys had moved back. They went with Micah Parsons, the linebacker out of Penn State. Chuck, I know you have some reservations about his ability to cover and therefore be an every down impact player. But how do you feel about this fit?
I just realized the typo is Jalen Smith of Jalen Smith. Whoops.
That's the editor's fault.
Yeah. I wonder who that is. I feel like Dallas, they just need playmakers on defense. And not only that, it's kind of getting hard to rely on Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith at this point just due to injuries. And like outside of that 1 year that Jalen Smith had for Dallas that got him paid, he hasn't really done all that much, I guess, to have faith that, you know, maybe he can get back into top form. But Parsons, he's someone that if he's moving forward, it looks great. If he's moving backwards in coverage, it doesn't always look that good. But the Cowboys just need someone who can just be a source of negative plays in the backfield. And we know Parsons can do that at a high level.
Yeah, I don't really have any thoughts on this pick. I mean, I don't really think it makes a lot of sense. I know like they have had problems at linebacker, but they've like tried to address this problem with high picks and it just hasn't really worked out. So I really thought if they were going to take Parsons, I think they should have just traded back.
You thought he would have been there still?
I think they could have gotten another linebacker.
Oh, you don't think much of linebackers really.
Yeah. But I will say this about Parsons. I think he is a real linebacker. compared to like Isaiah Simmons last year, I think you can actually play him in the box from day one. Whereas Isaiah Simmons, they try to play him in the box in week one, and Kyle Shanahan just tore him apart, and he eventually got benched.
Number 13, San Diego Chargers. A little bit of the same situation the Bengals were in. You know, how do we best help Justin Herbert? They ended up having Rashawn Slater as their pick. I think he's pretty clearly the top tackle available at that point, which is why we gave it a friendly grade, A-.
Yeah, and they didn't have to trade up to get a tackle. They stayed put. They didn't have to give up assets. They got a player that a lot of people saw as a top 10 talent. I don't know how Slater's going to turn out. Nobody knows, but that was good process at least.
Number 14, New York Jets. Back on the clock here. Elijah Vera Tucker was their pick. He's seen more as an inside offensive lineman, but just look at it, a B+. We're bullish on this pick.
Yeah, I like the fit a lot. I think he's a great player. And you know, our buddy Arif, I think it was Arif at least, did the math on it, and basically when you, based on the chart that he was using, it's some nerd crap that basically the Jets, when the pick was done, they basically gave up a fourth rounder in value to move up this far, which is, I think, notable when you think that the Bears had to give up a future first to move up the same amount of spots to get Justin Fields, which I don't blame them for, because the quarterback's so important that and Fields is a prospect worth of that. I think it's fine.
Right. And they may have been bidding against other teams too.
Yeah. But this is good for Zach Wilson, because you got Mekhi Becton, and I think Vera Tucker is going to slide right in at left guard next to Becton. And like, I don't know how much you guys have seen of him, but those guys are going to send people to the hospital. Like, it's going to be a lot of fun. And Joe Douglas said that Vera Tucker was a top 10 player on their board. And frankly, I have no reason to not believe that, because I think a lot of people had him mocked here to the Vikings. So he was clearly a highly thought of prospect, and to really like to trade up and then get some value back from the Vikings too before picking a player. I just thought that was a job well done by Joe Douglas.
All right, here it is. 15. Mac Jones goes to the New England Patriots. I have so many thoughts about this. We gave it a D+. You know, the narrative seemed to be like, oh, Bill Belichick got his guy. He stayed put and he got the quarterback he wants. Bill Belichick loves pocket passers. That was sort of at least the sense I got from what I was able to pay attention to. response to that?
I mean, I've seen people say that this was good value for Mac Jones. I don't think that's true.
It's better than three.
Well, that's true. But I just don't think he's a first-round talent. And it seems like the NFL agrees with me on this type of quarterback. If you look past, like, the last 20 years, there have only been, I think, three quarterbacks that average fewer rushing yards in college. Like, being able to move in college doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to run in the pros, but it still speaks to not only your athleticism, I think, but your problem solving ability. Yeah, like if you can't salvage a play by running and picking up extra yards on a scramble, I don't know how you survive in the NFL if you're not Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Phillip Rivers. And those guys just don't get developed anymore. It hasn't happened. Tom Brady was drafted nearly 25 years ago, like a quarter century ago. Why are we holding him up as an example of?
So this is my question. This is
pocket quarterbacks working in the NFL today.
Right. We were sort of hitting on this earlier. Like the Patriots, when Brady was there, there was sort of this feeling that they drafted wide receivers and put them on the shelf for a year because it was going to take them that long to acclimate to Tom Brady's demanding ways. Is there the possibility, because I think Belichick said that Cam Newton's his quarterback. Like, do you think that Belichick believes if he can have Mac Jones off to the side, the way that Jordan Love was off to the side for the Packers, that he can do the developmental things that you say are generally not happening because of the limited practice time? Can they hack the system, essentially, and make Mac Jones into this best version that a lot of people are seeing? I mean, is that what Bill Belichick's thinking? Like, I'm the person that can do this.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. I mean, based on Dean Pease's comments, which we wrote about, like, Belichick kind of took ownership of Brady's development around like 2006, 2007, and we saw what happened with Brady. But that ignores the fact that Mac Jones just isn't physically talented like those other guys. Like, Tom Brady's arm was strong. Like, you look at that 2007 Super Bowl, he threw like a pass at the end that would travel like 77 yards in the air. You look at his college highlights, and I posted some to Twitter today. He had an arm, and he could move in college against college athletes. He could move. Like, he avoided sacks. Like, free rushers in the pocket, he avoided them. Mac Jones couldn't do that at the college level. It's not going to work at the NFL level. And when we talk about his physical limitations, it's not just his mobility. It's his arm strength. And I think his accuracy, which is another one of his big selling points, falls off when he has people in his lap. And the same is not true for these other quarterbacks. Like, Phillip Rivers made amazing accurate throws with pass rushers right in his face. You don't really see that on Mac Jones's film. You see him take a hit after the throw, but dealing with pressure before the throw, that just wasn't his thing. And that's like the common thread between all these pocket passers that have managed to stay relevant in this era of football.
Is any story going to be remotely close to as insufferable as Boston people calling for Mac Jones to play this year?
No, because these people thought that Jarrett Stidham was an NFL starter, and anyone who watched Jarrett Stidham in college will tell you he was he wasn't good, but they kept like gaslighting us throughout the offseason.
You know, we're gonna have to talk about this like every week for the next
Here's the funniest part about the Stidham hype, just a quick detour real quick. You know, what people were saying when Stidham was getting the hype last year, like, over Cam, I was like, y'all, like, the last time that we saw Stidham play, he was getting pulled in a blowout win over the Jets. They were up by 30 points, and he threw a pick six, and Belichick pulled him and put Brady back in the game. It's not someone that he trusts. Like, what are we doing here? You don't trust him to keep a 30-point lead against, like, Adam Gase in the fourth quarter? That's not your quarterback.
They thought Stidham was Brady-like. What are they going to think about Mac Jones? They're gonna be thinking this guy's Peyton Manning by, like, July. And it's going to be insufferable. Look,
he's not Peyton Manning?
I honestly don't think he's going to play this year. I think he's the least pro ready of all the quarterbacks that were drafted, because he has nothing if he's not the smartest guy on the field, whereas all the other quarterbacks have physical talent. He doesn't have. I just can't see Cam Newton and Mac Jones in a competition to see who's the better football player, and Mac Jones winning that competition. And I think Belichick is the one coach who will – I don't think he'll care if he has a first-round pick.
So we have a question here. Are you surprised the Pats took Jones after the top four QBs came off the board, or is this something you expected? I'm surprised. I mean, I am.
I'm surprised.
I didn't think that Bill Belichick would go for this sort of prospect. I mean, I think – like, Steven, you gave this a rough grade, right? And you shared some – I mean, I think you sent out, like – the Pats' recent draft history, and like, the Patriots have been awful at drafting recently. Like, it's not like, oh, they missed a few. Like, they've been actually bad. And I mean,
and like, on top of that,
Bill Belichick's clearly the smartest football mind we've ever covered, but he's maybe not great at scouting at this point, or figuring out what he needs. I don't know.
On top of that, the Pats picks were bad in hindsight, but we knew they were bad on draft night. Like, drafting Sony Michel in the first round was bad.
Right.
On draft night.
Drafting N'Keal Harry.
N'Keal Harry was bad. Like, you drafted a wide receiver that can't separate. Surprisingly, he can't separate in the NFL. What a shock. But like, these people aren't beyond reproach. Like, we can criticize them, especially with these track records. Like, we had this conversation with Kyle Shanahan yesterday morning, where apparently he's this great quarterback evaluator who has never acquired a great quarterback.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, we're coming up on an hour already. We're not even halfway through the draft. We criticized the NFL for taking too long, and
let's just go. Let's just skip to the Kadarius Toney pick so I can make fun of it.
Yeah.
All right. Zaven Collins went 16 to the Cardinals, linebacker out of Tulsa. We give that a B-. Alex Leatherwood, the Raiders, went off the board. Raiders doing Raider things.
Right.
C-. Miami kept Jalen Phillips, the edge rusher from Miami, in Miami. We liked that pick.
It makes sense as a fit.
He's an injured guy. He's a guy who's had dealt with, I think it was concussions, right? And had been out, but has just all.
He's already retired before.
Right,
exactly. But, I mean, the guy, he runs a 4.4, and I think it really does show up on tape. He's a good player, and I think that if you need the edge at that point in the draft, just take the upside swing.
Right. After that, we are up to the football team of Washington, D.C., Jamin Davis, the linebacker out of Kentucky. Guy, he really moves side to side pretty nice, but I don't know. We gave it a C+. Maybe not an every down guy. New York Giants, Kadarius Toney. Or
what was my grade on this one?
Or C.
It's too high.
Honestly, it's too high.
For Giants fans.
That is way too high, bro.
They have so many options. They have so many wide receivers.
Here's the thing with Toney.
And they have Saquon Barkley.
Exactly. Here's the thing with Toney. I don't think that it was unreasonable for the Giants to want to take a receiver in the first round. But Toney, to me, is like the worst possible fit that they could have taken. Because if you watch them on tape, he's certainly not good enough to be as a route runner to be a starting slot receiver right now. There's no way he's better than Sterling Shepard, but I mean, he might end up playing there because Sterling has dealt with a lot of injuries basically every season. So he's not good enough to start over Sterling Shepard. We know he's not going to start on the outside over Kenny Galladay or Darius Slayton. So, one of his biggest strengths is getting the ball in his hands and then acting like being a wizard after that and making guys miss and doing that, catching a lot of short passes, slant screens, taking to the house, all that stuff. But, Saquon Barkley's really good at that too. So it's like someone's going to be losing out on touches here. And I think that it's probably going to end up being Toney. And I'm just like, why did you take this high? Because the skills are not what this offense really
is. I'm looking forward to Daniel Jones having an average depth of target of 2.3 yards next year.
And it's still going to take him 5 seconds to get rid of the ball. But you look at this receiving core, they spent a first round pick on Toney. They spent a lot of money on Galladay. They acquired Kyle Rudolph. And I still think Darius Slayton is the best receiver on this team. I'm not high on Kenny Galladay. I think he's a plodding route runner, and I think he's a contested catch guy who is a body catcher, which is kind of, incongruent. Now you have a receiver who can't run routes. You have a tight end in Evan Ingram who can't block. None of these players are really complete players outside of, for me, Darius Slayton. And I really don't think Daniel Jones is the one to get the most out of the supporting cast. It just, the pick doesn't make sense to me. At all.
And that's it. That didn't happen that often. Bill Barnwell tweeted earlier that it felt like this draft, a lot of fan bases were kind of okay compared to usually how it usually goes. And I think that's the case with a couple of these next picks. Indianapolis Colts got Kwity Paye, the edge rusher from Michigan. He's sort of raw. He's unrefined as a pass rusher, as most of the pass rushers in this class are. But, you're putting him next to DeForest Buckner, who just eats up blockers and takes all sorts of attention. So probably not an awful fit. We gave that a B-. The Tennessee Titans took Caleb Farley, the cornerback out of Virginia Tech, who's dealt with back injury issues that probably pushed him down a little bit. This is a clear area need for the Titans. I think Chucky wrote this one. This just all comes down to how healthy he can get and stay.
Yeah, if Farley can stay healthy, he has the potential to be an elite cornerback. It's just that all messed up.
Yeah.
And the Titans have shown they don't care about medicals. They hit on Jeffrey Simmons. Harold Landry wasn't so much of a hit. So I don't know. I like the pick. I think it when you're picking at this part of the first round, I think you should just, take swings at possible home runs. And I think Farley is definitely one of those guys.
Yeah.
He said afterward that he feels totally healthy. I mean, obviously, but for what it's worth, 23 Minnesota Vikings had moved back. They end up with Christian Darrisaw, the tackle out of Virginia Tech. Got to protect Kirk Cousins if he got him. Yeah. 24 Pittsburgh Steelers, first running back off the board, Najee Harris.
Yeah, this was a terrible pick by Pittsburgh. And I want to say that it really has nothing to do with Najee the player, because I thought Najee was a kick-ass running back prospect. But to me, he's more like the finisher on a good offense to take you over the line.
Right.
And Pittsburgh, like, you have so many needs. Like, the offensive line is crap right now.
Lost a bunch of guys.
Yeah, the passing game isn't good. Passing game's not going to be any good. So, like, I understand how you get to this point of, like, oh, well, you know, a running game will help Big Ben out. Let's take a running back. But you're already in such a bad spot on offense. I just don't see how Najee Harris changes much at all for you this year.
That was the narrative, is that, like, oh, the Steelers last year when things went wrong is because their running game didn't come through. Like, that's not how the NFL, like, that's not how football works.
Oh, they were bad because Big Ben was bad.
And the offensive line was bad. Like, the pick should have been them trying to, if they wanted to fix the run game, they should have tried to rehire Mike Munchak away from Denver. Like, once he left, the offensive line fell off a cliff and the running game went along with it. It's pretty obvious what's wrong with Pittsburgh's offense, and running back wasn't, like, I don't think that was the issue.
Number 25, Jacksonville Jaguars go with Travis Etienne, the running back out of Clemson. Hated this pick. I don't know. I mean, I guess if you got Tim Tebow at tight end, you don't really, like, you don't have to worry about too much else. So, you know, just add complimentary players. We gave this an F.
Like, running back spend so much time in pass pro, and we had Bruce Rossler on the pod a couple weeks ago, and he you know, went over his scouting report and mentioned how Etienne just, like, didn't seem interested in pass protection, and he wasn't good at it when he was interested in it. And that's such a big deal in the NFL on third downs, because you're going to see a lot of six-man protections. You're going to see a lot of exotic blitzes that a running back is going to be forced to pick up. And I think teams are just going to target him on third down, and it's going to make things a lot harder for Trevor. And if this draft is about surrounding Trevor with pieces that make his job easier, I know Etienne played with him, and that's, like, maybe some comfort to Lawrence, but this is not that pick. I think they're going to look back on this by, like, October and regret it.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence does not seem like a guy who is worried about, like, having buddies there with him. Like, he seems pretty self-confident, actually. Like, he'll be okay. Let me go back to the tracker here. Oh, Gregory Newsome the second was the 26th pick for the Browns, cornerback out of Northwestern. Love this pick. Browns are putting together something special in the secondary.
Yeah, I would also like to say that this was one of my mock draft picks that I got.
There you go. There you go. Andrew Berry listened to you. Andrew Berry's a smart guy, so.
Yeah, ever since I got my vaccine, I have a data chip that allows me to talk with him. But, you know, I like this fit for the Browns, but more than just the fit, the player, I just love, like, what they've done to secondary this offseason. You already had Denzel Ward. Troy Hill, who I thought was an extremely underrated piece of that Rams defense last year, he's going to come in and play cornerback. And you still have, like, the long-term prospect of Greedy Williams, if he can stay healthy and kind of figure that out. Right. And then you add Gregory Newsome to it. I mean, it's just you've got a high floor with Ward and Hill, and then you still got the two upside plays with Newsome and Greedy Williams. And then on the back end, you got Grant Delpit coming back from injury last year. So, you know, that's a question mark. But you signed John Johnson, like, one of the most just complete – safeties in the league to play next to him and kind of make that transition easier for him. I just, like, when you think about the moves that the Browns have made in the secondary, it just all has, like, a very clear vision, very aligned plan. Right. And I'm just a big fan of what they've done this offseason.
It clearly fits what Steven has honed in on, first with Belichick, and then the Chiefs actually followed suit, and the Rams followed suit. But just having guys who can do different things and, like, really thinking about putting together a secondary that can adjust and adapt on the fly, and thinking of it sort of like a basketball team is how he described it in one of the stories, that you have to have guys who can slide in different roles, and you can see that with the Browns.
Yeah, the one thing I will say is none of these Browns corners are going to tackle anybody this year. Teams are just going to be running to the perimeter all season long, but yeah, they can cover. So
27, somebody they'll have to cover. Baltimore Ravens pick Rashad Bateman, the wide receiver out of Minnesota. Feels like a good fit.
Yeah, thank God the Ravens picked a receiver. And I think, like, I really think, I don't think Bateman was the best receiver in the class, but I think he was the best fit for the Ravens offense. And that's like we talk about how Lamar Jackson throws over the middle and that's where he lives as a passer. And in this class, I think the best player at getting open in that area of the field is Rashad Bateman. So just stylistically, I think it's a great fit. Then you talk about the value of getting a receiver that could potentially be a number one type receiver at the end of the first round. Value is great. They didn't have to trade down or trade up to get him. I really like this. Like I believe they had a trade up to get Hollywood Brown, who never profiled as that type of receiver.
Not as dynamic. Yeah.
And I also think this like allows those receivers to fall into place. Like Hollywood Brown can now be a number two option, right, which I think he fits. Like Hollywood Brown has been a decent receiver. Yeah. If you look at his production, like he's put up decent numbers, and I think this just is going to make his job so much easier.
28 New Orleans Saints pick Peyton Turner, an edge rusher out of Houston. One of the more fast rising guys, I guess. I mean, it felt like there was not as much movement along those lines this year because of the lack of draft season events. But this was a guy whose name was creeping up boards, it seemed.
I don't even know who this guy is.
Yeah, I can't even cry. I've never heard of him before when he got drafted. I was like, who is that? And I actually thought I watched a good amount of defensive linemen for the draft, but that one just completely escaped me somehow.
C+ we gave it. Green Bay Packers.
So funny. Well, we don't know anything about this, but we gave it C+.
We decided. Green Bay Packers not helping Aaron Rodgers out. Eric Stokes, a corner that I don't know. I don't remember us talking about much.
I've talked about him in our group chat. I think his film was bad. Mm. Like he tested well, but it does not show up on film. This does not look like a guy who runs.
It's a red flag, it feels like.
Right. This is like SEC Kevin King. Mm. Like,
yeah.
I don't think he makes them better. Like, I think he's redundant. And it's like they were almost trolling Aaron Rodgers by making this pick. Like, I don't know which receiver they could have taken at this point that would have made sense, but I don't know about this pick. Like, I can't imagine this made Aaron Rodgers any happier.
Yeah, Stokes is weird as hell because the 4-2, it shows up, like, when he gets his hand on the ball and, like, runs back for interceptions. Like, he had a lot of big returns when he got his hand on the ball. But when he's, like, in coverage, he just does not really look like a guy that is super-duper athletic. Like, I was kind of surprised that he blew up the pro day workout like he did. And I don't quite get the fit here. But they did get a new defensive coordinator. Maybe that guy feels like he fits his scheme, but you know, we'll see what happens. This was kind of a surprising fit to me.
And I think maybe you could say that playing in Georgia's defense, like there's a lot of, like it's mentally tough on a cornerback more so than other teams maybe. But I think the Packers hired someone from the Rams and trying to do that same kind of defense. So it's not going to be any easier for him. I don't know. I really think this pick is destined to fail, but we'll see. We never know. He does have tools.
Yeah. Number 30, Buffalo Bills went with Gregory Rousseau, another edge out of Miami. He actually opted out last year. So, you know, not recent film. Gave this a B-. How do you feel about this for the Bills? Team that seems to be on the cusp. Does this help them?
Maybe.
I mean, they needed pass rush.
Yeah, they needed pass rush. I just don't know if Russo is that guy. But, like, we've talked, me and Steven have talked about it with our buddy Justice Foscato a lot. And it's just, you know, he's probably not that good right now, but it's just hard to find guys with that body type. And I know that
right.
You know, the Bills, they seem to like some of these bigger defensive ends. I mean, they drafted. Man, what's the kid's name from Iowa?
Epinesa?
Epinesa. And he's kind of like a similar body type to Rousseau. Rousseau, he didn't do well at his pro day, like, right. At all, which is kind of a red flag. But
just since he didn't play, and he should have just been training for pro day all year.
The Bills have just been, like, trying to find these defensive ends in this, like, same area of the draft, like, every year. It's kind of like their version of John Elway drafting the same quarterback over and over again, and he keeps failing. Like, I feel like that's where the Bills are with defensive end.
Ravens back in the clock at 31. They also went with an edge rusher. And the thing I have to say is, so this player went by the name Jason at Penn State. He has now said that he wants to go by his first name, which is Odafe. And apparently it was too hard to pronounce for people, but he doesn't care now. He wants people to pronounce it. And this is the greatest thing that has ever happened to Baltimore, because this guy's name is Odafe Owe. And everyone in Baltimore is just going to love to pronounce this guy's name. Like, I just kind of want to go downtown right now and be like, Odafe Owe, everybody. Like,
just get a camera and have as many Baltimore people as you can pronounce this guy's name. And it would be great content.
That'd be great content. Like,
yeah.
I'll summon the Ravens to do that. I got to say, I'm not a fan of this guy as a prospect. Personally, I think he sucks. But I mean, come on. Like, he had no, you were on a 4-3, you got zero sacks in Big Ten. What's going on here?
I like how you went from like a soft criticism. You're like, I'm not a big fan of him. He sucks.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if there is one team,
right, it's Wink.
One of the teams that you think could figure out how to get this guy to be a productive player, like Baltimore is one of the organizations that we just kind of trust to figure these things out. And to be fair, like Baltimore recently has had a ridiculous track record at developing these guys on the edge when they come in. You're going back to Pernell McPhee, Matt Judon, Tyus Bowser was a second contract guy. You know, they missed on Tim Williams, but then, you know, they come back and their front seven evaluations are always so strong. They seem to find guys that fit, that it's just one of the situations where I trust this organization enough to give them benefit of the doubt. And they've proven so many times over and over and over again that when you get to Baltimore, especially on defense, and really it seems to have kind of be true at a lot of positions, but since John Harbaugh's been hired, but when you get to Baltimore, you get better as a football player. And Martindale is a perfect defensive coordinator for him, because Martindale doesn't care about anything, but we're going to blitz and we're going to play man coverage. And we got a linebacker who can run 4-3, and he's going to be doing a lot of blitzing before.
He's never going to have to beat an offensive tackle for a sack this year. It's going to be running backs. He's just going to be able to run over running backs, and that's all his job will be. And I think he's capable of doing that. And if that's all he has to do, like, he could end up being an 8-sack guy within like 2 years.
Right. And, right. Like you said, a lot of running back blocks. There's going to be a lot of stuff where he's going to start on the edge and loop back inside. And you know, like, imagine if you're a tackle and you're already dealing with all the crazy blitzes that Martindale sends. Now you got a guy who runs a 4-3, literally just flying right past your face. And before you know it, your quarterback's like in the turf. Like, this is if Owe didn't land with the right spot, I just don't see how he kind of figures it out. But this team, you know, like I said, they got the track record and they should be trusted to make, especially front seven picks.
Having said that, good job by the Bengals taking a receiver instead of an offensive lineman, getting to face this defense twice a year.
32nd pick of the first round, Tampa Bay Buccaneers pick Joe Tryon, a rush edge rusher, I guess, out of Washington. Let's not talk about the Bucs. They're bringing everybody back. They add a little bit of talent. I don't know. Tom Brady's going to probably win another Super Bowl.
Yeah, he'll probably be fine. I mean, they just literally brought back the whole team. I'm not really interested.
How many games does this team win with if you swap out Tom Brady for Mac Jones?
Honestly, I think they get a good deal worse.
me too. Like, I feel like Mac Jones isn't as physically impressive as Tom Brady is now.
Yeah. I don't think Tom Brady's arm is like super strong now, but for the majority of his career, he had one of the better arms in the league. Like, he's not some little arm like Will Torp out there.
Yeah. Are you saying Mac Jones is?
It's up to you to decide.
You said Owe sucks, but you refuse to criticize Mac Jones. Interesting.
Yeah.
True feelings coming out once we're on video. See how
I am wearing a Michael Jordan shirt right now.
Let's talk about tonight. 7 o'clock, round two begins. Who are you guys still excited about? Like, who are the
there's actually
one or two.
There's a good amount of guys that are still on the board that I thought had a chance to go in the first round. I mean, obviously, because we're at the start of round two, that's not a groundbreaking thing to say. But One guy I'm interested to see is where Javonte Williams from UNC goes. There's not an insignificant amount of people that believe that he's the best running back in the draft. We already saw Tugo last night, so I'm kind of interested to see where he falls. And then the other guy that I am kind of fascinated with is Creed Humphrey. He's a guard or a center from Oklahoma. He's just a ridiculous athlete, and I think he's really sound fundamentally too. So that just kind of seems like a guy you end up taking the second round. Next thing you know, he started.
And I want to see where the two Moores go, the small receivers, Rondell Moore, Elijah Moore. I really like Rondell Moore. I know he's 5'7", and 5'7" receivers don't work in the NFL, but I think he's a good football player. He's not a Tavon Austin to me. I think there's like something to his game. And Elijah Moore, I'm not as high on him as other people. I don't think he has enough. I don't know what it is. Like, he wasn't creating a ton of separation when I watched him. It was more of like he was a smart player who knew how to get open in zone defenses. And you can use him as a running back. I think Chuck tweeted out some runs when he was used as like a legitimate running back. And he showed some stuff there. So I want to see where he ends up. And then I'm not going to attempt to pronounce his name, but JOK, who Charles forgot to put in his first round mock draft, and the NFL forgot to put him in the first round.
Let's go.
Yeah. I don't get why he fell out of the first round. Like, he seems to be that maybe NFL teams are getting smarter about these hybrid players and like realizing they're not hybrid players. They're just players that aren't good at any one thing. But I think he has a chance to be a really special player. I want to see where he ends up.
All right. Let's close it up with which team are you now most excited to see next season? And both of you are not allowed to pick the 49ers. You have to somebody has to diverge. And Chuck, you can't pick the Falcons.
I mean, who can we pick then?
I'm not excited to watch the Falcons. The defense is so but I am kind of excited to see. All right, look, first of all, let me say I just don't believe at all for 1 second that Andy Dalton is going to play like a significant amount of time this year. I'm just excited to see Justin Fields and Allen Robinson to see if that can revitalize Allen Robinson's love for the game. Because yeah, when he got that franchise tag, he was not one happy camper.
Yeah, he deserves a good quarterback.
I would say the Jaguars. Like, I really am excited to see Trevor Lawrence in an offense that wasn't designed for like a middle school quarterback. Like, that was one of the big issues I had with the fact that Trevor Lawrence couldn't leave earlier is he was stuck in this offense, which is just basically like calling smash concepts over and over again and throwing in RPOs. I want to see what happens when he gets a full plate for like an NFL quarterback. I think he's capable of being a top 10 quarterback from day one. I don't know if Jacksonville has enough around him, but like they have some fun players to watch. So
I love Dabo slander. So thanks for ending the show with that. All right, guys, thanks for joining us. It's been really fun. Find us on Twitter if you have any other questions, thoughts you want to share, fights you want to start with Charles or Steven. They will be happy to oblige. And we'll be around tonight seeing what happens in the second round. It's good. Sort of an unknown year. We'll see if it gets crazy. I mean, I feel like there were a couple guys who jumped into the first round. I think that's probably going to happen even more so, where there's guys like jumping into the second and third that we don't know much about, but teams with their infinitely superior resources as far as getting film and evaluating these players will have moved them up without really the media knowing. So it could be an interesting latter part of the draft. So stick with us. Hit us up at For the Win. We'll have some coverage there. And we appreciate you being here. We'll talk to you next time.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.